From KCRW, this is Greater LA. It's the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Maybe you know that sound. Maybe you own or someone you know owns an electric car, an electric vehicle. If you don't, you will soon. They're all around us these days, especially right here in Los Angeles. EVs, including both fully electric cars and plug-in hybrid cars, are enjoying a major growth spurt. The Energy Department says a little more than 90,000 of them were sold in the United States in February. That's a more than 50% jump from a year ago. And odds are those numbers are just going to keep going up, especially here in California. Governor Gavin Newsom signed a law banning the sale of all new gas-powered cars by the year 2035. That's only 12 years from now. So, is now the time to buy an electric vehicle if you've been on the fence? KCRW's automotive tech and science guy Todd Mesereau is here to help you decide. Hey, Todd.
Hello, Steve.
You and I have talked about this a few times. Are we reaching the tipping point, like the beginning of a real transition from gasoline-powered cars to electric vehicles?
That is a good question, Steve. And, you know, anyone who's paid for gas in the last year has probably been thinking about it themselves. The numbers would indicate we are seeing a shift, not just in California and the United States, but globally. Last year, for the first time, more than 10 million EVs were sold globally. One in four of those in China, one in five of those in the EU, and here in the US, it was one in 10. That's all according to numbers we get from the World Economic Forum.
So the US is a little behind China, Todd, and the EU as well when it comes to EV sales. So how about here in California? Do we try and make it up here?
We do all right here. Last year, just over 1.8 million cars were sold in California, and about one in every five of them was an EV. So pretty close to the EU numbers. And, you know, that number is only going to grow because, as you noted, California will ban the sale of new gasoline-powered vehicles by 2035.
If you haven't bought an electric car yet, or maybe you're thinking about it, is it the time to go buy one?
Well, you know, if you talk to an EV owner, they will try and convince you that now is the time. I talked with Katie Poole, who started with a Toyota RAV4 EV, moved on to a Chevy Bolt, and recently upgraded to the newest model Bolt.
What do I love about it? It's kind of like driving an iPhone. It never breaks. I never go to my dealer. The maintenance is effectively zero. That's got to be huge for people who are driving these cars. For me, it's just, I hate going to gas stations. I never go to gas stations. When I am in a car that gets gas, I am reminded of what I have to deal with there. But what I like is the actual car is not emitting anything. It's very efficient.
Like driving an iPhone. It's like I'm trying to envision. Is that like a magic carpet ride? So we heard Katie there, Todd, talking about how one of the main reasons she loves driving her EV is because it's zero emissions, right? It's doing well by the environment. But what other reasons did EV drivers give you for why they're happy to make the switch?
Well, for some people, the gateway to an alternative fuel car was the access to the carpool lane. If you have a newly purchased qualifying EV, that sticker allows you to cruise the carpool lane alone with impunity. That California policy is what motivated Saeed Jaffer. He's been driving an EV since 2009.
Yeah, I think it's funny. People ask me, are you some kind of environmental nut or something that you did it that early? And I'm really not. You know what it was is the carpool lane sticker program started in about 2000, and I heard about it, and I would use the carpool lane. It probably saves me, you know, 10 to 15 minutes of my round-trip commute, but I felt it was worth it.
You know, there is, though, a bit of a catch, however. The California Clean Air Vehicle Decal Program, the sticker Saeed is talking about, they're set to expire the fall of 2025. So unless it's renewed, that leaves about 2.5 years left of driving your new EV in the HOV lane alone.
Yeah, you remember the days when you could drive a hybrid in the carpool lane. Remember that, Todd? And those went away a long time ago.
Yes, it did, sadly.
So maybe the California clean air vehicle stickers will go away, but there are some budget upsides too, right? The federal government, I know the state government, they have incentive programs to get folks to buy EVs right now to get you, you know, the carrot for you, if you will. What kind of offers are out there?
Well, the Inflation Reduction Act, that was the big health, climate, and tax law President Biden signed last year. It provides up to $7,500 in tax credits for the purchase of certain new EVs. But just last week, the federal government unveiled new requirements that will significantly shrink the list of eligible cars. The credit will be tied to the sourcing of critical materials in EV batteries, for instance. And that's on top of previous requirements about where the cars are made and assembled. So the full details won't be out until April 18. So if you know you want an EV, now might actually be the best time to buy one, because the government says it will grandfather in EVs purchased in advance of the new requirements. The other incentives, there are incentives offered here in California through the Clean Vehicle Rebate Program. It offers rebates for people who buy or lease new EVs, and those amounts range from $1,000 to $7,500.
All right, so those are some of the arguments in support of buying an EV right now. What are the reasons for maybe holding off?
Well, the main reason for holding off now is the price. Within a 50-mile radius of downtown Los Angeles, the least expensive gas-powered car I found was a brand-new 2022 Chevrolet Spark, listed at a little under $16,000. The least expensive EV I found was a 2022 Chevy Bolt, listed at almost $27,000. So that's a $10,000 difference, not insignificant. I did talk with Keith Berry, who's an automotive writer for Consumer Reports. He thinks it might make sense to wait.
So I think that right now, the EV market is growing, but they're mostly luxury models. They've got an average sale price over $61,000. Part of that's driven by some high-end vehicles, some Teslas, some Lucids, Porsches. But that means that those cars aren't necessarily affordable for the average consumer.
So in other words, Keith is saying if you own a luxury gas-powered car and you want to trade in for a luxury EV, then maybe, yeah, that does make sense financially. But for everyone else, the savings might not be there yet.
You know, something like a Ford F-150 Lightning, it can be a sort of a hard pill to swallow to say to yourself or to your family, well, I'm going to spend $80,000 on a truck to save some money. That's a tough one. But, you know, I think that's where some real advances need to be made in the heart of the market. You know, most Americans want small to mid-size SUVs, cars like the Hyundai Tucson, the RAV4, the CR-V. And that's where we're just not quite seeing electric vehicles coming down in price point yet in that heart of the market.
So for now, the most sense for most drivers, Keith thinks, is a hybrid to get you some of the new technology savings without any sort of disruption in your normal driving patterns or the sticker shock of a shiny new EV.
Well, for the folks who are convinced that now is the time to make the switch, are there cars on the lot right now, Todd? You know, we've been hearing for at least a year, a couple of years, about how hard it is to buy a car. Has that changed? Remember, it's been, you know, there have been these asking prices of $5,000-$10,000 more. I mean, it's been really tough to buy a new car.
It has been tough. And, you know, like everything else that seems to be changing rapidly at this moment in history, the answer is yes and no. It has changed and it hasn't changed. I mean, if you're looking for the more affordable options, they're out there, but they're not plentiful. I found only 14 new Chevy Bolts for sale all around LA. However, on the luxury side, you do have options. For example, there were more than 200 BMW iXs available. It's a mid-size car and retails for more than $80,000. At some point, the supply chain will return to previous levels, but it's not there yet, at least not on the more affordable end of things.
All right, KCRW's automotive and tech and science guy, Todd Mesereau, always here to help. Todd, thanks.
Thank you, Steve. My pleasure. Driver A. Driver A.
Coming up, how to make prison more humane and at the same time a place for rehabilitation, not just punishment. Is the Norwegian system the answer? Back after this short break.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. San Quentin is the oldest and most notorious prison in the state of California, home to more than 3,000 incarcerated people and the largest death row in America. It's been the subject of multiple investigations for abuse, neglect, and overcrowding. Governor Gavin Newsom recently announced a vision to transform prisons in California, and he wants to start by turning San Quentin into what he calls the preeminent restorative justice facility in the world. Those are his words. The reimagined San Quentin Rehabilitation Center would include job training, additional programming, and extensive services to help prepare people for productive lives on the outside and disrupt a cycle of recidivism. The governor citing Norway's prison system as a model for the new approach. Well, Nate McKinney from Hawthorne, California, spent more than 20 years at San Quentin before paroling about a year ago. While inside, Nate was the managing editor of the San Quentin News, and he co-founded the Uncuffed podcast, which gave folks in prison a voice. Last year, soon after the parole board freed him, Nate and the Uncuffed podcast team went on a trip to visit a maximum security prison in Norway, and he's with us right now to tell us about it. Nate, welcome to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Talk a little bit about San Quentin. I mean, San Quentin is notorious. You spent a couple of decades there. How would you describe life inside?
Well, actually, the infamy is far gone. The most notoriety it gets nowadays for is a rehabilitative program. They had such things years ago as Blood Alley and things of that nature. And that's what the reoccurring theme seems to be when people hear the name San Quentin, and that rings volumes. But lately, the state of California, through the process of rehabilitation, has tried to transform the prison into a model of California success by taking out what is notorious, what is infamous for, which is violence and blood and warehousing human beings, into a more restorative mode. And that's the vein that when I first came near, what it was like. But don't get me wrong, incarceration is incarceration, and there's no easy way to be incarcerated. But if you have to be incarcerated, you want to be into an environment where it's enriching and it provides apparatuses for building character and moral fiber. And this is the vein that Governor Newsom is trying to model behind the example of the Norwegian model.
So when you talk about how it's changed, there was the infamy before, and now things are better. It is more restorative instead of punitive, as you know, and we'll get to that in a little while about the American view on that. But when you talk about that kind of restorative programming, did it help change the course of your life?
Absolutely. Through education and awareness and through therapy, helped change the path, the trajectory that most people are the residents of San Quentin was on. Because if you think about California prisons when I first got there and you had a life sentence, that means that you were going to die in prison. So it created a hopeless environment. And so we had a bunch of hopeless individuals doing maximum amount of time with no restorative or rehabilitative apparatuses to take advantage of. So when I got there and I found out they had education besides a correspondence course, you actually had butts and seats and instructors who were active in the community from Berkeley, from Stanford, from University of San Francisco, who came and volunteered their time in order to help residents of San Quentin improved academically, and also they had therapeutic courses like restorative justice, anger management, and numerous amount of self-help groups to help you achieve and to deal with and process the trauma that most people experienced that in the first place they wound up in prison. This was an easement or a transitional period for me in order to find out that I am worth it.
It sounds like they were talking to you as a human being and not as a number, not as, you know, a cog in the carceral wheel, as it were.
Yeah, we all had individual treatment, and we learned the processes of social construction and what goes where and why. And when you're able to decode, if you may, the situations and circumstances that even brought you to prison that you weren't even aware of, you're able to cope. You're able to have that aha moment and say, oh, I understand. And when you know better, you could do better. And that was the process, which was an immense booster to me finally being released.
What was it like? What was going through your mind when you finally got out of there?
It was a relief. It's like being in suspended animation, captured in time with a ton of bricks on your chest, unable to breathe and unable to actualize any of your dreams or plans. And anything that you think about other than that day is only an exercise in futility, because it can never be actualized until you're free, until you have autonomy, until you're on your own. So in that particular moment, all the possibilities and all the things that I planned for were finally going to be actualized in my mind. So if it was like, it was great. It was like, here we go. Thank God.
So the parole board says you're free. And as I mentioned, shortly after that, you were on a plane to Norway to tour some of the prisons there, you know, renowned for being relatively humane, certainly more than a lot of the prisons here in the United States. I want to play a clip from that visit on your podcast.
I see trees. I see a horse. Right. We're walking on a dock? Right, leading to the prison.
You're describing all these things at a place called Bestow in Norway. What was your first impression of that place, and how did it compare to where you were in San Quentin?
First of all, the boat ride over was surreal. It was beautiful. And when we got there and we landed, I was telling the captain, like, thank you. And he told me that he was a resident. And I was like, what? Yeah, he was actually operating the boat. And when we first got there, I didn't see any bars. I didn't see any uniforms. I didn't see in no prison. I seen houses, individual houses. And they were like 5-bedroom houses. And they were all spread out across the landscape. And it kind of reminded me of a scene on a Little House on the Prairie, because I started seeing animals. I started seeing horses. And I was like, wow, it's like we took a trip to the farm. And
is a prison.
Yeah,
and it's a prison. It's not a farm. This is a prison.
This is a prison. They had animals, they had goats, because they grow and produce their food. And they had crops. And I couldn't decipher or determine who was a resident and who was the guards, because everybody had on civilian clothes. And nobody seemed tense. Everybody was welcoming. They took us, and we saw a marathon. We came around the day they were running a marathon. And the marathon was participants on the staff and the residents. And nobody had on any kind of prison garb. The environment was totally relaxed. And it felt like we just went to a day camp.
What were people there being, quote-unquote, incarcerated for?
From hopscotch to murder.
Really?
Meaning, like, from people who had relatively light crimes to people who were convicted of homicide. And they were on a step-down program. That means being reintegrated with society and being able to go home. They get, like,
I think it was 4 passes a year, where they leave the confines of the prison and go and live with their people. They go live amongst their wives, their children, and their neighbors. And I think they're able to do that 4 times a year before they're finally released back into society.
Is it realistic, Nate, for something like that to happen in the United States, for that to happen in
Absolutely
a place like
realistic.
San Quentin? It is.
Well, if you take away the stigma and the global labeling of dangerous and not fit for public safety, so to speak, I'm talking about the language that they use, it's people that's been serving decades in prison that could come home tonight without any shift shock and be productive members of society. Because no one stays in that snapshot of violence or that particular mold who's grown. And absolutely, because one day most people who are convicted of violent crimes are coming home. It's inevitable. There's no way to get around that. They're going to be your neighbor. They're going to be the person you see in a grocery store or in the post office. And you would never know unless they told you. Now, we have people that are sociopaths, that they're not ready to come to the mainstream. And everybody realizes that because they'll demonstrate that behavior when they're incarcerated. But I'm talking about the people who've done the work with due diligence and prepared themselves to live a productive lives. And it's a vast number of people who are just being warehoused that could be your neighbor, and you would never know.
Are Americans ready for it? Do you think they're? I mean, because there are plenty of Americans, Nate, who believe that prison should be for punishment, that you shouldn't have trees, you shouldn't have open space, you shouldn't have much in the way of civil rights. It's sort of baked in this country.
Mm-hmm.
That you're incarcerated for a reason. That prisons aren't about restoration. It's about tough luck. You got caught.
Mm-hmm.
So can it happen here? Can something like that happen here?
Absolutely it can happen here, because we have to think about what we've been receiving and why we have one of the world's highest recidivism rate because of that attitude. Now, you got to think in terms of, if I fed a person a straight diet of violence, shut out, dehumanized, marginalized, and then released him back into society, what am I releasing back into society? But if I take that same individual and I educate him, I send him through the self-help groups, I give him therapy, I give him a reason to want to be an integral part of society, what kind of person is my neighbor going to be? You have to think in terms of that. Because if we keep doing what we've always been doing, we're going to get what we always got. So you got to ask yourself, what do I want? What do I want to invest in? To perpetrate this violent predator? Or do I want to humanize and treat this person like we care? Because that's how he's going to treat you once he's released.
Nate McKinney, a journalist, formerly incarcerated person who co-founded the podcast Uncuffed. Nate, thank you for telling us your story. We appreciate it. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and God bless you.
Well, that's it for today. Tomorrow, when it comes to weed and indoor cannabis grows, things are actually not very green. Can you believe it? As in environmentally sustainable. So who's trying to fix that? We're online at kcrw.com/GLA. Tell us how you're doing. Share your thoughts with us. Maybe even share a story idea, too. Something happening in your neighborhood? Talk about it. Grab the podcast while you're there, too. kcrw.com/GLA. And, of course, you can get the Greater LA Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Put us in your lineup, would you? Search KCRW Greater LA. Juliana Mayo, Zeke Reed, Zoe Matthew, Michelle Aloy, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all help put the show together this evening. I'm Steve Giotakis. Thank you for your time, your attention, and of course that ear. Have a great night.